Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way. On this week's episode of the Marketing Stir podcast, Hugo Gomez from Abogados Now joins Vincent to discuss the nuances and complexities of creating marketing campaigns designed to effectively reach a Hispanic audience.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to another episode of the MarketingStir.com. I am your happy host, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista. It is great talking to you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm always as happy as you know, but a little sad today, a little sad only because my co-host, AJ Gupta, is not going to be joining us today. He is on a trip, a business trip. I'm flying solo. It's okay. I've flown solo before. I'm rocking it out. And it's going to be great because I have a great guest to talk to. But ladies and gentlemen, let's pause for a moment and talk about Stirista. We are a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data, our own business-to-consumer data. We help companies market to that data through our technology. Our ESP, our DSP, that's an email sending platform, a demand side platform. If you want, need new customers, email me, maybe Vincent@Stirista.com. You can call me if you get my number. I'm not going to give my number to all these listeners, but thank you for those people who are reaching out. Thank you for those people who are coming up to me at conferences and telling me how much you love the podcast, how much you're like, is that really your and AJ's personality? It is. We really talk like that. This is really us. And it's great. Also, special announcement, ladies and gentlemen, you know that I am a big ham in front of the camera. I'm hosting, again, the Silver Apple Awards, the Marketing Club of New York Silver Apple Awards. I am your host again, back by popular demand. It's the 40th annual. It's a big one. I missed it last year. It was me and my wife's 10-year wedding anniversary on the day of the show. Couldn't miss that. Maybe it was the 7th or the 12th anniversary. Maybe I miss it, but the 10th, that's a special one, ladies and gentlemen. Also special, this guest. We hit it off. I feel like I know this guy. I feel like we hung out in high school, but I don't know him personally, right? But, you know, I love his story because, and we'll talk about it in a moment, but because it's very semi-similar to really why the founder of Stirista started Stirista, you know, multicultural marketing, just areas of underserved marketing. Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome. The founder of HispanicMarketing.com, Hugo Gomez. What's going on, Hugo?
Awesome, Vincent. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's great to see you again, my friend. I feel like it's been a while, but we're here. We're rocking it out. We're doing it. What's good with you in California?
That's great. You know, planning for some travel with the wife and some downtime. We've had a pretty busy couple quarters. So looking forward to some rest and then getting back to the grind. You know how it is.
I love it. I love it. You traveling up to New York City, this beautiful city of mine, or no?
Not this year. We usually do. When we go to Europe, we typically go to Manhattan, stay a couple of days, and then we typically go to Europe or Switzerland. So, but this time we're just going straight over. We don't have that much time this year.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It seems like it's, I have kids. I don't know if you have kids, but it seems like now that they're like in school, the summers are so short. It's just like, all right, we have 8 weeks to do something fun, but it's crazy. Well, good to see you. Hugo, let's talk about it. So you know, Stirista is really, my owner, my founder, he immigrated here from India. And really, one of the reasons he started Stirista was because he felt that, you know, multicultural Stirista is kind of, it's an underserved area. And a lot of the things we focus on here at Stirista is serving those underserved markets, right? And now and the same thing with you, right? Tell us about HispanicMarketing.com. You know, your path has been really in this market for years now. Tell us, you know, why this market, you know, tell us about the organization.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started my marketing career over a decade ago and in, you know, personal finance, consumer finance, commercial finance, and then legal. And all those jobs were about lead generation, just making phones ring. And always there was always a conversation about finding incremental markets or areas of the market that are untapped or underserved. And every job that I had, I always introduced some kind of Hispanic marketing angle. And that just ended up becoming my MO. It just became like my fingerprint in consulting gigs and jobs, full times. And I just realized that this should be an organization. There should be a digital marketing organization that only focuses like on mobile marketing, video marketing, social marketing for businesses that haven't caught up to that trend. So I'll give you some context. Consumer packaged goods, they're pretty ahead of the times when it comes to Hispanic and multicultural marketing. They do really well in TV and radio and print advertising in Spanish. So we don't fulfill any need in that front. But what we found is that in the legal verticals, in the financial verticals, in some sectors of entertainment or hospitality, many of these organizations have really strong marketing teams, but they wouldn't know where to even begin to apply their strategies in the Hispanic market. So that's what we aim to do. HispanicMarketing.com aims to get businesses more customers from the fastest growing market in the US, which is the Hispanic market.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Hugo, like when you think of the Hispanic market, are marketers just like, oh, okay, I can just, you know, dub it in Spanish? No, it's more than that, right? It's, well, that's a start, right? But are you talking to these companies about what products and services and what vacations resonate with the Hispanic market?
Absolutely. We tell people all the time that translation work is about efficiencies. It's not about effectiveness. If you get someone to translate your work from English to Spanish, that will work. It's efficient, but it's not culturally effective. So we find that the messaging, it's sort of like a great song. And if you want to write a hit song, the song by itself on a piano and a guitar has to be exceptional. And everything that you add on top of it will probably make it more marketable. But the song fundamentally has to be great. I see it the same with marketing communications, that the message is more important than the colors or the actors or the video production or kind of the strategies of the widgets to distribute them. The messaging is so important. So what I always tell organizations is, great, you know, attempt at going Spanish friendly by translating, but it's a lot more work than that. What works in English will not work in Spanish and vice versa. There are so many examples of this, which I can nerd out on, but in general, translation is a noble first step, but it is oftentimes the worst thing you can do in multicultural.
So let's stay on some of those, let's nerd out a little bit, Hugo. What are some things that are working, right? Like you said some industries there, legal, but what are some things in your mind are working? You mentioned consumer packaged goods, but what about it, right? What about that? And what about some other trends are working to further the benefit of Hispanic marketing?
Yeah, so in digital, so we're really good at professional services lead generation. So insurance, legal, injury law, immigration law, you know, regional banks, like we're really good at getting a business's message in front of Hispanic markets. And so what we find is that the best way to do it in this market is to deliver strong Hispanic friendly messages through mobile devices on streaming video content distributed on social media. So it's not to say we don't do anything else, but a lot of our work goes back to those three fronts because US Hispanics adopt mobile devices at a higher rate than the general market, which surprises a lot of people because you would assume that the general market overwhelmingly, you know, adopts mobile devices than any other market, but it's actually the inverse. And we found that there's a socioeconomic reality to it. If you're an immigrant, you come to the United States, you're not likely working on, you know, the financial district with a white collar job on a desktop, but you are certainly likely to have a mobile phone. So it's democratized access to the internet, it's the mobile phone. Nielsen also did a study where they found that Hispanics watch more streaming video than the general market. And there's a lot of other media studies that Hispanics trust what they read on social media more than the general market. So we take these realities of where the market is, a very rich, dense, mobile video, social media friendly market. We get messages from businesses to that market through that distribution model. And so there are a lot of amazing organizations outside of us doing it, but you know, our work is really popular in legal and in the medical sector, because we've just figured out what are those emotional and value touch points that can get people to call in.
I love that. And also, one of the first things you and I talked about, Abogados Now, right? That was something that you had started. Why did you start there? Is that it? Because like you said, underserved, right? Legal is important. That's one of the, you know, when you're seeing a lawyer, it's for a good reason. It's for something. So tell us about that story.
Yeah. So Abogados Now was the first company I started. Its objective is to help attorneys advertise in Spanish, because most legal markets are super saturated in English marketing. So we've been able to effectively tell attorneys, hey, we can get you more clients by advertising in Spanish. And so I started there because that was the low-hanging fruit across all these verticals. I just saw unilaterally, there was no Hispanic representation digitally in the legal vertical. So that's where we started. Over 300 members across the US. And that just got us popular in other verticals. People saw our work in legal and knocked on our door and said, can you help us out in hospitality or regional banks or with this dental group that's nationwide? And so that's why I started HispanicMarketing.com. I just realized that that's really a holding company for these individual agencies that cater to particular industries, like medical, like legal, and other verticals that are more like insurance lead specific. So we own a few companies under the HispanicMarketing.com umbrella, but they all service the same function. It's get you more business through Spanish advertising.
No, I love it. So let's take a step back, Hugo. You were talking about your first foray into the workforce. It was in finance. So where did marketing come into play? Was it already marketing? And then that was the area you're helping financial companies. So how'd you get started in marketing? And then how did you always have like an entrepreneurial spirit? Tell us about those.
Yeah, I mean, I was a journalism major, so I knew how to write good copy. And I didn't even know that writing marketing copy was a job. So my first job was in credit repair for a credit repair organization many, many years ago. Didn't really know anything about the space, but I learned everything about it in about a year and realized that marketing copy really touches on a lot of marketing channels like email marketing and paid search and social media. So I just ended up having to learn all these other, you know, channels. And I was part of one exit, and then that forayed into a commercial finance role, like heavy equipment leasing, which is, again, another very niche like sector, you know, tractor lending and loaders lending. It was very, very niche.
Yeah.
But I had no entrepreneurial spirit, candidly. I'd known enough business owners that their lives were pretty stressful, and I just didn't want to repeat that. But it just so happened that the opportunity after, you know, a decade in the business and legal and finance, seeing that there is this opportunity there, I just realized that if no one else is going to do it the way I wanted it done, I was going to have to be the one to do it. So I never really had intentions on running or owning a business. But it was just something that I felt had to be done in order for it to be done the way I wanted it to be done for the Hispanic market.
No, I love hearing that. You know, we talk to a lot of people, and you hear people who started companies where it's like, look, I had a bad experience in customer service at this type of company or industry. So I decided to start. Well, I've heard that a lot. I mean, having done, you know, 170 plus episodes thus far. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I've never planned on it. I started six companies in college. It was more of like, I was seeing something done a certain way or not done a certain way and I started it. So no, I love that aspect of it. So Hugo, talk to us about, you were talking about some of the fields that you started in still are in: legal, medical, insurance. Those are all industries that involve usually a personal relationship with the customer, the client, the patient. Are you mindful of that in your marketing tactics when you're working with those companies?
Oh, absolutely. Because that's, you know, you mentioned like that example of the person that worked in customer service and they saw it being done wrong and they saw a better way to do it. You know, whenever I was talking to organizations about like Hispanic marketing, they always defaulted to TV, radio, print. And I would always evangelize the standpoint from all these media studies that Hispanics are super, super digital forward, oftentimes more so than the general market. So I just took that as sort of like the starting point to discuss all these other important parts of the relationship building between a business and a customer. It starts first with the distribution. You need the message in Spanish to get to the right Hispanic market. That's like step one. And if you're not digital forward, you're done. And so it's so, so critical that to address that first step. The second is what you mentioned is how to manage the relationship between the business and the consumer. And what we find is in Spanish, it's setting up that expectation that the business is truly bilingual friendly is more important than it is obviously in English. In English, most English speaking consumers, they assume that the businesses that they're going to interact with speak English because they live in the United States, and they would be correct. But a US Hispanic person, immigrant or non-immigrant, Spanish dominant, documented or not documented, they are going to wonder if they call into the business, if they can speak to someone in Spanish. And so our job is not just to tell a business, this is your distribution model through digital. It's to add that level of messaging that you know that local Hispanic market. So if you're in Miami, you should know how Cubans think because that's very heavily dense in Cuban Americans. If you're in Los Angeles, you should know how generally Mexicans think. In New York, it is so diverse. You have to play to so many fields there. Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Mexicans, Ecuadorians, El Salvadorians. So we believe that the most sensitive part of getting this right is establishing that expectation of bilingual friendliness after the distribution. So if you got the click, you got the video, what are you going to tell them? You got to tell that US Hispanic market that you are the best in bilingual friendliness, that you have a Hispanic staff, or at least that you have a staff that speaks Spanish. That you get those two things right, the relationship will blossom. Oftentimes, Hispanic consumer bases are more loyal. They're more referral friendly than the general market. So it's a huge win in the long term.
Yeah, and I could not agree with you more. I think that, and also me living in New York City, you're right. You have to market and cater to a variety of different people. Also, our headquarters are in San Antonio. We have tons of people on our staff that are bilingual. You know, I'm bilingual, right? I speak Spanish, believe it or not. I'm Italian, but my stepfather was from Mexico. So I learned, and also growing up in New York, I'm like, when am I going to use Italian, Grandma? I'm not going to use Italian. This is great. So yes, I love that. I want to talk about the reason I bring up San Antonio, right? There are some of we have different size clients, but there's also clients that are smaller, but need that help, right? There's so many attorneys, there's so many car dealerships, right, that are looking at, you know, that we work with really in the San Antonio area. So did you start, Hugo, kind of, it wasn't like out of the gate, I'm working with, you know, this huge car dealer globally. I'm sure it was kind of like starting with the local attorneys, some small car dealers. Is that how it kind of started and built?
Yeah, absolutely. Like before, you know, we're really lucky now We work with some of the largest, you know, law firms and medical groups in the country that lean on us as their, you know, agency partner in Spanish, which is amazing. But yeah, to start, to build, you know, build up the points and the credibility and the authority in the industry, we started working with very small businesses. And candidly, we still do. We love working with small businesses because we can build them up and turn them into really heavy hitter competitors. So I can speak a lot to the legal aspect because that's where we have the most experience. But generally speaking, we'll work with the solo attorney. And over the course of the year, they'll have hired a staff by the end of that first year with us. Then they'll be able to afford hiring more attorneys. They'll be able to afford to go to trial. Then they'll be able to afford bigger plays with billboards, all because they found they trusted our process and found that the Hispanic market was not just an incremental market. It's a vital market right next to the general market. So yeah, we love working with small businesses still. We're a little more selective because we want to work with smaller businesses that are super growth minded. So if they're a part of masterminds or they go part to like CEO networking events, we know that they probably fit the DNA of the person that we want to work with because we want to develop them. That's ideally what we want to do. So yeah, at the beginning, working with lots of small businesses and many of them who are still with us today.
You're in California, but are there branch offices that you kind of focus on? There's a, or are you coming out to New York to visit people again? Because you said there's, you know, such a need here for your services. What's the setup? You have people, you know, offices here, or are you doing the traveling? I mean, obviously, a lot of things are remote. Talk to us about that.
100% virtual. Most of our management team is in the East Coast. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm the only employee. Actually, no, there's only two employees in California. She's our webinar producer. But just in general, our management staff is dense in the United States. The fulfillment staff is largely in Central America, Mexico, and South America. And the reason for that is because who better to write Spanish copy and Spanish creative than people who live in Latin America? So we're heavily dense in South America, lots of team members in Ecuador, Colombia, Argentina. And we do meet once a year in Argentina. That's kind of the hub. So I guess that would be a branch if you called it that for like our fulfillment. But we're so bifurcated. We're so disparate across the world that we need to be virtually. We need a staff virtually, which is great. It's the best setup for us.
Now that's amazing to hear. I love Argentina. That's not a bad place to had my honeymoon in Argentina, Buenos Aires, then Mendoza for all those beautiful Malbecs up there. You know, by the time this airs, either Argentina or Colombia will have won the Copa America, right? So
oh yeah, they're this whenever Copa America happens or the World Cup happens, we always see a dip in productivity. But but then there's a lot of wagering on Slack channels, which I think is really fun. So yeah, right now everyone wants Argentina to win because so many of our team members are there. So you know, we'll roll with it, even though I'm from Ecuador. You know, I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. I've been glued to it myself. My 7-year-old loves Messi, and I was like, he's old. He's already old. You should like a younger, but no, he's the best. So that's amazing. Hugo, are there any industries that you're trying to get into that you're now seeing some success of, areas where you're like, we need to expand and get into just because I feel like they can use our help? How's that process going?
Yeah, right now our focus is pretty hyper focused on medical growth in medical, that includes big pharma. So conversations happening there, nothing certain. But the industry's warming up to the model that we're presenting, which is really, really pretty awesome that we have that kind of support from, you know, legacy marketing departments that typically don't do these kinds of experiments, and also beyond regional banks. So going for more nationwide plays in consumer finance, I think fintech, we've not tapped that at all. I have some fintech experience in the general market, but I see fintech as massive in Mexico right now. And I could see that translating quite well to immigrants in the United States. So, you know, we try not to get too trigger happy, you know, with getting into new verticals. But I think those verticals are going to see exceptional growth within our organization over the next 2 years.
And is that kind of the plan under HispanicMarketing.com? Is kind of that those are the next steps there?
Absolutely. I think it's setting up niche agencies per vertical for Hispanic marketing.
Hugo, this is a question we ask a lot of our guests, not all of them, but it's if you can go back, tell your younger self. You're still young, man. So, but if you could tell your younger self, what advice would you give them? What's something starting a business that was like easier than you expected? Some things that were harder than expected? Love to hear about that.
Yeah, I think if I were to tell my younger self that started this company 6+ years ago, I would probably focus on repeatable processes, because scaling can only happen through great training, and training is a lot easier if you have repeatable processes. So we treated the company in the beginning stages as a consultancy, which was the right decision at the time. I was the founder doing founding sales, treating every client with white glove treatment, understanding their needs, their capabilities, their limitations, and then giving them recommendations. That is super hands-on, right? And so every client that we manage in those first couple of years had their own onboarding process and their own custom way of going live. For instance, if we had a marketing package, one member in our program would start with a video shoot and then get a website and then get an ads program. Some people just started with an ads program, then we would do a video shoot. And so it was all very custom, very hands-on. And so I think that was just inexperience on my side, just not knowing how critical that was, that scaling would have been a lot faster had we just built out the processes that we wanted that were repeatable and trainable in order to generate not just more sales, but better experiences for every member that was in the program. So I would probably focus on that. I would tell myself that day one person, that day one founder, that is probably going to be the most important theme of the next couple of years.
And I think that's great advice. Here's a question we ask every one of our guests. It's our LinkedIn question. You're a founder of a company, right? A lot of people are reaching out to you via LinkedIn. What is a message, Hugo, that resonates with you that you'll respond to? And what is a pet peeve? What's something that you hate?
I love it when someone messages me on LinkedIn with an incredibly high value 1-2 line message. And I received one the other day. I said, are you using AI to automate your cold email responses? And I immediately in my head said, no, we're not. And that sounds like a great idea. And I said, brilliant, let's talk. That was so high value to me, because on the inverse, I think you know where I'm going to go with this. It's the 10 paragraph. Hi, how are you? Love that you live in LA. Go Lakers. Oh, you also went to Cal State Long Beach. Go 49ers. That's amazing. I hope that we can have a chance to meet up. And I'm like, this is such a waste of time. And I get those messages from people who add me on LinkedIn and set up an automation with such a message. And my friend Anish, he calls it a pitch slap. And so
I love it.
And it's like, it's that experience. You accept and you get that, you get hit with that message and you just immediately regret accepting that. So I've been a little more selective on who I accept now. But I love it when people are brief and high value. And it's probably just because I've been hanging around with attorneys too much.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's that conversation about AI and cold outreach. But who knows, that person who reached out to you via LinkedIn, that might have been an AI generated let's pull stuff from Hugo and see. It's like, you know, yeah, go, you're just pulling every sport team down and just naming, go Galaxy, go Lakers, go Clippers. It's like, well, wait, you can't say both. We got you. We caught you.
Happens all the time. Happens all the time.
I was recently pitch slapped a few times because, again, I said on this podcast a lot where people will, it's always like, oh, that like 17 to 23 mutual connections that gets me. And I'm like, if it's two or three, nope. But if it's like 17, I'm like, yeah, I'll connect with them. And then pop, pop. It's like, and then they're setting the Calendly and it's like, come on, man, what are you doing?
So intense.
It is pitch slap. I love it. That's a great term. That's the unofficial name of the episode, but no, we'll have something better than that. But so what are you excited about mostly, Hugo, about the just future of Hispanic marketing to, you know, or Hispanics, or just the future of how the buying power of Hispanic people? I think that's can't be undervalued. That's huge. What are your thoughts about it? What are you excited about?
Massive excitement. I'm going to read you something here because I always have my stats list here, just because you mentioned buying power. This is from my friend Isaac Mizrahi. He is a multicultural.
Yeah, he is a designer, right? Isn't?
Oh, yeah, he's also the same name of a designer. Yeah.
But oh, it's like, not the same. Guy. Okay. Same.
I know. Yeah.
I'm a New Yorker, so I'm like fashion, New York.
Yeah. Same name, but this is one of the authorities in Hispanic marketing, and he wrote this in his book, Hispanic Market Power. And this one line says, since 2010, real Hispanic GDP has grown 57% faster than real US GDP and 70% faster than non-Hispanic GDP, which is mind-blowing. This is like not a segment of the United States anymore. This is a whole other country, several other countries that live within the United States. And that gets me super excited because it's not now a translation exercise. We now know that Hispanics are not a monolith. They don't just speak English and Spanish, or like I'm a very good representation. I speak both. I'm bicultural. So I go, you know, I'm super, super American oftentimes. And I'm also super, super Hispanic, although, you know, Hispanics are Americans, but I think you get where I'm going. I'm Ecuadorian. And then I straddle the line in between. And there are there are tens of millions of U.S. Hispanics that straddle between. They're English dominant, non-Spanish, Spanish dominant, non-English, bicultural, they're bilingual. There's so many shades of it. But the underlying truth is that no matter the assimilation level of a U.S. Hispanic, overwhelmingly Hispanics are very much connected to their Hispanic background, even a little bit. And so that just tells us that we as marketers, we still need to craft unique messages for even, let's call it, the most quote-unquote gringo Hispanic in the United States. We still need to create some value in that marketing message there. It's quite effective. So when we hear these numbers, these GDP numbers, it's going to make the best marketers work harder, but those are the marketers that are going to yield the most business and generate the most business. The ones that are just kind of ignoring this reality, this massive tsunami demographic wave, I think they're just going to see less and less business. And there's even another stat here that the non-minority population growth was negative. So if you are a white person in the United States, the white population for the first time ever decreased by about 2.6% between the last decade, 2010 and 2020. So we're seeing these massive demographic changes. We're seeing huge Hispanic buying power. We're seeing the general market, at least in the white population, decreasing. Things are changing right now. And so I'm super excited about organizations that take that seriously, because they're the ones, especially the Geico's of the world, the Kellogg's of the world, the CPG brands, the ones that take this seriously, they're going to stick around in another 100 years. The ones that are ignoring this reality that are happening right now, they're toast. So I'm super excited.
I love it. And you're right. I knew some of those facts just again, because just the what Starista does in certain, you know, areas and cultures and how seriously we take that. I love it. I also learned there is more than one Isaac Mizrahi. So I love it. I'm going to check him out as well. That's great. So Hugo, we're wrapping up the podcast. We do get to know the guest personally. You said LA. What do you like to do for fun? Who are your sports teams? Let's see if that AI bot got it right. Let's see, you know, what are you doing on the weekend? You said travel with the family coming up, but what do you like doing?
Love traveling. I'm a season ticket holder for the Rams. So no one talks to me about the Rams on cold email. So I know they don't know me.
That's it. I know you now. I'm like, how about those Rams? Yeah, Stafford, yeah, this is the last year. What's going on? Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope not.
No.
So I love going. So being in LA, one of the reasons my wife and I stay here, despite the sunshine tax, despite the incredibly high cost of living out here, is because we love going to concerts. We go to concerts so much, like every other week, if not every week. We love seeing live music. We love going to live sporting events. We just like being around like entertainment culture because she's a teacher. She works really hard. I work really hard all day. We love to kind of wind down by being out. And so we just love being out. That's why we stick around in LA. It's like the best hub next to New York City. I mean, let's be honest, like second to New York City for kind of on-demand kind of entertainment, just quality, just fun. You know, I just like, I love working, but I also work to play. You know, I love having that part of my life. So it's not just about the grind.
I know. I agree. And that's a reason, like, yeah, LA, very similar to New York City. You know, my wife and I and my two boys, we live here and we bought a place last year. We kind of doubled down on staying in Manhattan when, similar to what you're talking about, Hugo, people are like, New York City, what are you, crazy? It's so much money to live there. And it's like, isn't there so much crime? What do you do? Are there even schools there? I'm like, what? What do you mean there's schools there? And I'm like, we're just sticking around because there's something to do every single night. There's music, there's entertainment, there's Broadway, there's, you know, food. Talk about New York City, talk about Hispanic, you know, influence. I have some of the best restaurants in the world right next to me. If I want to get Ecuadorian food, El Salvadorian food, I want a pupusa loco. Come on, let's go. You know, it's a place here called that. This is great. And so similar. I love going to a couple concerts this summer and, you know, forget it. There's so many things to do. This is great, Hugo. I really appreciate your time. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Hugo Gomez. He's the founder of HispanicMarketing.com. Check him out. Check out the podcast. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. That's Hugo Gomez. Also, AJ Gupta. Shout out to AJ. This has been another episode of The Marketing Stir. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to The Marketing Stir podcast by Starista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@starista.com.